goodbye. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's packing.
Yeah.
She's gonna be leaving today.
Wild Card Wednesday, man. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing, everybody? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about your brushes with fame. If you ever met a celebrity or had a brush with a celebrity or a famous person, 312-981-7200. But that was our first Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, wild. Randy chose Dr. Hook with Sylvia's mother. Dan, do you know that song?
I did not know that song.
It was actually a pretty big hit. Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show is the full name of the band. And you know, they had a real big hit. That was a minor hit. I just love the way he delivered Sylvia's mother's head. Esmeralda, it's almost poodle like. It's almost, you know, with the crying poodle.
Right? You should do a compilation of just those songs.
And just call it the crying poodle songs.
That would work.
Do you know that song, Sylvia's Mother, by Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show?
I do not.
Their hit was the cover of the Rolling Stone. Remember that song?
Sing it.
Can you, Dan, find cover of the Rolling Stone? It was actually a really big hit. And Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show for a flashing moment in the mid-70s were very popular. Vic, what about you? You familiar with Dr. Hook's work?
No. I'm listening intently.
Yeah.
That's cover of the Rolling Stone was a really big hit. I don't know.
$10,000 a show, right? We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we've never known is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Yes. Stone.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
And he made the cover of the Rolling Stone. after that song was a hit, he did indeed make the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Kid Rock, backup vocals in that song, too. Little known.
What?
Did you hear Kid Rock in there?
Oh, I was going to say, because Kid Rock, I don't think, was even born when
he
that song.
He had one line. Yeah!
Yeah, the
I'm
yeah!
Sure that was Kid Rock.
Or Lil Jon. Yeah!
You keep saying that Lil Jon, I keep thinking of the Muppets.
Why?
I don't know why. What's the name of that band?
What, the Muppet Band?
Yeah.
I don't even know. Do they have a name? I know Animal was on drums.
Yeah, the Mr. Cuckoo.
No, what?
It's got like a weird name, just like them.
So, like, you mean like Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show?
Yeah.
So they had a name. I didn't even know they had, what was it, Dan?
According to Muppet Wikipedia, they were known as Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah,
yeah,
see,
that's
they're
right.
Probably a playoff of that,
that's,
or something.
Yeah, that's it, Dr. Teeth. Because the guy, oh, by the way, that Muppet looks like Dr. Hook.
It probably, oh, that's probably a whole play on them then.
Yeah, he looks like Dr. Hook. If you put that Muppet next to a picture of Dr. Hook, then that's they it's like a Muppetized version of Dr. Hook. And he talked like Dr. Hook, too, the Muppet. Dr. Hook talked like this.
Look at that. We're seeing the references now.
Wow.
Also, that is part of a fantastic movie, Almost Famous, because they sing that song when they find out they're making the cover of the Rolling Stone.
They do, don't they?
Yeah, in the restaurant.
I totally forgot about that. So there you go. There it is. That was a really popular song, man. But Sylvia's mother's dead. Yeah, they were popular for about 15 minutes. All right. Before we get into our brushes with fame, and I'm very excited to hear Esmeralda's latest story. But I want to talk about yesterday was Paul Giamatti's birthday. And we all should have celebrated, you know, by watching all of his movies, because he's in over 112 movies. So we should have watched all of them yesterday. So here's the thing. Esmeralda, do you know how old he turned?
47.
Wow. You are really low-barring.
Really? He's older?
Paul Giamatti. We're talking about Paul Giamatti?
Right.
All right.
Maybe I think, because I always think that they kind of stay because of the movies, and then I watch them. Like, he can't be more than 40-something.
Well, which movie
but
are you talking?
Grown Up.
Grown?
I don't know. I haven't
grown
seen
up?
It. Well, he's grown older.
Oh, he has. Yeah. He has. But I'll tell you, that's surprising that you said 47, because he turned 50.
I wasn't that far off.
No, you weren't.
It sound like I was like, he's 25.
No, you weren't, because I think, I always thought he was much older. I thought Paul Giamatti, I was like, oh, he must be turning 55.
I think he's one of those guys that probably looked 32 in the eighth grade, though.
Yeah, you're no question about it. No question about it. You know, he
doesn't look that old, 55.
Yeah, hey, take it easy. I turned 52 this year.
Right, but you're making him, so exactly then, you shouldn't.
No, I was surprised because I think he looks older than 50. I think he looks older than 50, and he's played roles that are older than 50 pretty frequently, you know?
A lot of makeup.
I don't, not necessarily.
Movie magic.
Not necessarily. But see, for me, the reason why I think he's older is because, you know, I'm In less than a month, I turned 52, and when I saw the movie Sideways, that was one of the first movies that I ever saw really spoke to me.
Love that movie.
I do too. I adore it, and it's about being middle aged. And I have, it's about what you know. I finally, when I saw Sideways, I was like, yeah, I'm a middle aged man.
Okay, wait, what? How old do you think he is?
I thought he was older than, I thought he was about like 54, 55. Did not think he just turned 50.
Okay, got it.
It's just, and one of the reasons is because I'm older than Paul Giamatti, and I was like, how could I be older than Paul Giamatti? How is it possible that I am older than Paul Giamatti?
Good genes.
Yeah.
Well, and even if he was older than you,
yeah,
he doesn't do any. You know, he's not doing anything that normal people are doing.
What do you mean?
You know, he goes and plays pretend, and a movie gets made, and then he goes home and he does nothing, or he kind of hangs. Like, he doesn't have the major stresses that normal people have.
Yeah,
as if the elements don't have the same effect on Paul Giamatti that they do.
He's
on
living
the rest
in L.A.
He's not in a bubble.
You know,
he kind of is. He's in L.A.
That's
I'm
true,
sure.
Actually.
Yeah, you know, Keith Richards has had a gifted life.
No,
doesn't
well,
have to
I mean,
worry
that
about
guy.
I mean,
he was gifted in many other ways.
But he's, you know, he looks like he's been dead for 15 years.
Yeah, but he was gifting himself drugs.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah. Well, anyway, the thing about what's like when Sideways came out, I was like, it was the first time I was like, yeah, I got to admit the fact that I'm middle aged. And when that movie came out in 2004, I was 39 when that movie came out. I was right on the cusp of 40. And it was like the timing of that movie coming out and me just about turning 40 was that movie had a massive impact on me. Like a huge impact. And the lead character, the character that Giamatti plays, Miles, is a character that of any movie I've ever seen that I most closely identify with. In every good and bad way, because he's a deeply flawed character. And the only difference is, like, everything that Miles goes through in that movie, I've gone through, I felt it, except I would never steal from my mother. Because he steals money from his mom in the movie, which is a pretty despicable thing to do. But I would never do that. Everything else he says and does, I've done or would do. And that's very not, it's not very complimentary to my character at all. But when I saw Sideways, I was like, oh my God, I can identify with everything that's happening. So I just always looked at him as maybe a little bit older than me, and he's not. He's younger. But he's a fascinating guy, Paul Giamatti. He really is. And here's what they say about him. We have 15 surprising facts about Paul Giamatti. Let me give you the introduction, and then we'll take a break and come back and go through some of these, because Paul Giamatti rules. Over the course of nearly 30 years and approximately 100 film and television roles, Paul Giamatti has worked his way up from a blink-and-you'll-miss-him role like Heckler Number 2 to become an Oscar-nominated leading man. While he continues to build a diverse resume of film roles with projects like American Splendor, Sideways, Cinderella Man, 12 Years a Slave, and Straight Outta Compton, he's also bringing his singular brand of wit and talent to the small screen on Showtime's Billions. To celebrate his 50th birthday, here are 15 things you might not know about Paul Giamatti, and we'll tell you all about those. This great actor. And he was fantastic in Straight Outta Compton, by the way. He's fantastic in everything. So, all right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, facts about Paul Giamatti, and then we'll jump into the brush with fame and celebrity encounters. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Are the listeners just going to make this an endurance test this morning? What the hell? Oh. 630 area code on Wildcard Wednesday. A crash test dummies with the song. Yeah, man. What was that? 93? Around that time, right? Got to be, right? Early 90s? 93? They have another hit. It's the only one that I know, right? Because I get them confused with the other bands of that era.
Released October 1st, 1993.
Wow, huh? I know my crash test dummies, man. Can't pull any of the rug over on me when it comes to the crash test dummies. All right. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah! Get your requests in. Unless they're that. 312-981-7200. There you go. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Okay, here are some facts about Paul Giamatti. Here's one, Esmeralda. Are you ready for this fascinating fact about Paul Giamatti?
Yeah.
He turned 50 yesterday, and here he grew up wanting to be a professor.
That I can see.
Yeah. Growing up in a family surrounded by academics, Paul Giamatti considered following in his father's career path and becoming a professor. In 1978, at the age of 40, Giamatti's father, Bart, we'll get to him a little bit later, by the way. If you don't recognize Bart Giamatti already, then you probably don't follow baseball. You probably haven't followed baseball. He was appointed president of Yale University, the youngest person to ever hold that position. How did he get into baseball? This guy's a Yale. He's a Yale for the president of Yale. How does that get you to baseball commissioner? How does that? Sorry, I just blew the secret. But yeah, Bart Giamatti was baseball commissioner. How do you do that? I was never a class clown or put on shows at home. Giamatti told the Scotsman about his roundabout road to becoming an actor. I never thought of acting as something I could do with my life. When I was a kid, I used to run around wrapped in toilet paper so I could be the mummy. Oh, my God, I did the same thing. I would wrap myself in toilet paper and pretend to be the mummy. I'm telling you, Paul Giamatti is my spirit animal. I'm telling you right now. But that wasn't a sign of I was dreaming. I was just an odd child. Oh, thanks, Paul. I don't think it's odd at all to be 5 years old and wrap yourself in toilet paper and run around the house like you're the mummy. Say, speaking of mummies, that opens this weekend. It's a chick mummy. It's going to be cool, man. She's got four eyeballs. And she and it's the girl. By the way, you know who plays the mummy in the movie? The girl?
Who's that?
I don't know her name. But she was the girl, the badass girl from Star Trek Beyond, the last Star Trek movie, the girl who had the paint all over her face and the dreads. She kicked ass in that movie, in Star Trek Beyond. Okay, next on the facts about Paul Giamatti, he had a strange obsession with baseball umpires. I'm not surprised. Growing up, Giamatti was oddly fascinated with baseball umpires. I don't think it had anything to do with their authority, he told The Believer. It was more of a fascination with the appearance of the home plate umps. They would wear those old school chest protectors and the masks, and they always dressed in black. There's something weirdly sinister about those cats. Of course, I've always been drawn to the supporting characters, ancillary supporting characters in drama. If you look at the game of baseball as a narrative of some kind, the umps are the bit players. They're the character actors in almost any situation, and I'm invariably interested in people that nobody pays much attention to. Whatever happened to those big black things that the umpires would have in front of their chest? Those things were cool, man. You guys even remember that, Dan? You remember?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Big, giant black things in front of their chests so they didn't get hit with balls. Now you have to wait till they got into position because they had to hold them.
Right.
It was like this
there,
big.
There were arm holes.
It was like, yeah, there were. It was like a giant black shield in front of them. It's fantastic. His father was the man who. Here's another fact. His father was the man who banned Pete Rose from baseball. Giamatti's obsession with baseball supporting players might make more sense when you consider that after leaving his position at Yale in 1986, Bart Giamatti became the president of the National League and in 1989 was appointed MLB commissioner. Though he only held the position for 5 months, the elder Giamatti then passed away in September of 1989. He managed to make one memorable move during his tenure when he banned Pete Rose from the game amid allegations that he was betting on baseball games. Here's another thing that Bart Giamatti did. To this day, Bill Murray blames Bart Giamatti for the Cubs not winning the World Series in 1984 because he's the one who changed the thing because they didn't have lights at Wrigley in 84. Oh, no, it couldn't have been him because he wasn't in the position then. He took it over in 86.
Well, he was in National League 86 or
But I'm talking 84. So it wasn't his fault because he didn't have the position. Why did I hear that?
Well, I mean, he might have been in baseball,
yeah,
and might have had a hand in the decision, even though he wasn't.
It's
in
the the decision was that they altered the schedule because the Cubs didn't have lights, and therefore there were more games away at night. Because it was like an unfair thing. Everybody says that, you know, that had there been lights at Wrigley, it would have been a different outcome in 84. So, let's see. Paul Giamatti likes playing supporting roles. Though he emerged as a leading man in the early 2000s, he likes playing the supporting roles better. All right? And Esmeralda, we'll take a break for the news. And when we come back, here's a little tidbit about how M. Night Shyamalan feels about him.
Great.
All right, the news is next. Yeah. See, now we're getting somewhere. The Fix rules. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Continues 312-981-7200. That's Tom requesting the Fix. One thing leads to another. They rule. The Fix rules. It was about 10 years ago I dragged Heather to see the Fix at Taste of Schaumburg. Because I saw that they were playing. I'm like, okay, we have to go. It's one of my favorite bands of the 80s. So we go. And we got up. I got there early because I wanted to get right up next to the stage. I'm serious. I'm not joking when I say that I absolutely love the Fix. So we got up close and we're standing there, and the stage was between the porta potties and the tilter whirl. So I'm sure that the Fix were thrilled about that. And before they came out, the mayor of Schaumburg came up on stage and introduced the finalists for Miss Teen Schaumburg. This was the opening act for the Fix. They had to follow that. And then the mayor of Schaumburg, he introduces all the girls, and then the queen of the teen Schaumburg pageant, he introduces all these girls. They're all standing there with their sashes on and their crowns and stuff. And then you know, then they leave the stage and he introduces the Fix and just says, ladies and gentlemen, Fix. He dropped off the. So Cy Kernan, who's the lead singer of the Fix, he comes out, two giant bottles of wine, because clearly he's not going to make it through this show by the porta potties and the vomiting drunk guys by the tilt-a-whirl without some wine. They were great, though, except the crowd, they were all like, I mean, because at this point, people had been there for a long time and everybody was drunk. There were a lot of drunk people there. And everybody was just like, I don't even think they knew who they were, but everybody was just going, play that one song. They were a really obnoxious crowd. And the one song is One Thing Leads to Another, although they had more than one hit. And then they played One Thing Leads to Another, and everybody left except me. Heather left, too. She's like, screw this, I'm going. No, she didn't.
Would have gotten on the tilt-a-whirl.
I'm just standing there at the end of the night by myself, my girlfriend and my ride gone, and I'm just standing there in Schaumburg cheering, the one person cheering for the Fix. So, all right, we're learning a lot about Paul Giamatti this morning. Anybody ever have an encounter with Paul Giamatti? I've never had the pleasure of interviewing him or anything. He's one of my favorite actors in the world.
We did just have a caller who called in because he got Bart Giamatti's autograph.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
All right.
We'll save that for Brushes with Celebrity.
Yeah. We'll save that one for, yeah. So, Esmeralda, do you remember the movie that Paul Giamatti unfortunately made with Shamalama Ding Dong?
The Girl in the Water.
The Lady in the Water.
Oh, Lady in the Water.
Yeah. Horrendous movie. Horrendous. Not a surprise. But he's good in it. That's the thing. Like, I remember seeing the movie, and afterwards I'm like, why did he even bother giving such a good performance? Because he's really good in it. It's like, you devoted way too much time and energy to this performance because this movie is horrible. But here's what M. Night Shyamalan says. He doesn't see Giamatti as a bit player. Quote, he is very much a leading man. For me, he's like Tom Hanks. He can carry a movie. And Paul's eyes are very beautiful in a puppy dog way. The audience is compelled to want this person, compelled to what that person wants, and is a total sign of a real star. See, now this is one of the only things I ever agree with M. Night Shyamalan about.
That was getting a little weird, wasn't it?
What do you mean with the puppy dog eyes?
Yeah.
Well, he's beautiful.
Just a little bit.
Paul Giamatti's a beautiful man. Looks older than he is, but he's a beautiful man. How about this? You ready for this one? Paul Giamatti's most challenging role required him to sit in poop. That was when he was in Lady in the Water, because he was in poop. Hold on a minute. Wait a second now. All right. Did you see Lady in the Water, Esmeralda?
I did not. No, I haven't seen any M. Night Shyamalan movie since The Village.
Oh.
And now Split. But in between, I was like, I refuse.
Oh, The Village. Hey, look, hey, here's the big twist. It's Modern Times.
I got so mad.
Oh, my God.
I saw it in the theater.
Oh.
So angry.
Oh. And Signs. What a stupid movie that was. Hey, these aliens are supposed to be really, intelligent. Let's go to a place that's 70% what we're allergic to. And what happens? Did the aliens ever think, what happens if it rains? What if we show up on a cloudy day and it rains? A stupid movie. So required him to sit in poop, Esmeralda. When asked about his biggest challenge he faced as an actor, the ever self-deprecating Giamatti said that it was one of his earliest roles. I believe the character was called, he says, Man in a Sleeping Bag. A homeless guy. It may have just been Man. Who knows? It was an episode of NYPD Blue. We were squatters in a village below Manhattan Bridge. I was lying in real human feces. Because a real lunatic who lived there in a huge drainage pipe of some kind would crawl out and occasionally pelt me with debris. That's terrible. And they had to pay him a lot to stay in his pipe. Good for him. I had one line, something like, I don't know nothing, man, and I screwed it up. I sat around all day, and at one point I got thrown off the set by a PA who thought that I was a real man in a sleeping bag. And then when asked what's the most fun he had playing a part, Giamatti responded, man in the sleeping bag. This is a good one. He couldn't believe that anyone would want to make or watch a movie about wine. It's Giamatti. Though Sideways may be one of the best known and most beloved films on Giamatti's resume, the actor himself wasn't sure about it. He said that when he was offered the part, his first thought was, no one will make this movie, and who the hell is going to watch a movie about wine? For the record, Giamatti freely admits that he knows nothing about wine, and he's fine with that. And, of course, you guys know that every time he's out in a bar and people spot him, they send over Merlot. Which is, he hates them. In the movie, Miles hates Merlot. Send him Pinot. If you're going to send him wine, send him the wine that the character loved. Send him Pinot. Don't send him Merlot. Here's another one. Paul Giamatti also got food poisoning while making Sideways, and he also got very drunk. In the DVD commentary for Sideways, which is great, by the way, I highly recommend watching it with the commentary. Giamatti and his co-star Thomas Hayden Church discussed how they both got food poisoning after filming the dinner scene with Giamatti's on-screen mom. Oh no! On another occasion, Giamatti got very, very drunk. Giamatti says, there was one dinner scene where I had to drink a blank load, and by the end of the night, I was completely hammered. Fortunately, I didn't have to do much talking, but I got really messed up. It was great. You can tell that I'm kind of messed up. Maybe that's why the Academy didn't nominate me for the movie, because I'm clearly drunk. Do you know the scene? You guys know, you've seen Sideways, right?
Yeah.
It's the scene where they're out on the date with Sandra Oh and Virginia Madsen. And they keep ordering a ton of wine, and then he drunk dials his ex. That's the scene where he got loaded. Not when he drunk dials, like he was sober there, but when they're at the table, like after he comes back from drunk dialing his ex, he's really loaded. Like, it's Paul Giamatti, it's like loaded. Yeah, the commentary on that movie is great. Well, everything about that movie is great. Okay. All right, we'll take a break. We'll learn a little bit more about Paul Giamatti, and then I want to hear about your brushes with famous people, including Bart Giamatti. So... This is good, man. I've never heard this before. 815 area code requested the Punch Brothers and their cover of Just What I Needed. That's good, man. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! 312-981-7200. Oh, I like that. Cool. All right, some more facts about Paul Giamatti. Esmeralda, this is the thing. People are now, because of this show, going to know so much about Paul Giamatti. And entertain people at parties.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what we can do with the information.
You can share it at parties and impress everyone that know that he got food poisoning during the dinner scene with his mom, with his mother.
That's to imagine a scenario where one of our listeners goes on Jeopardy and there's a Paul Giamatti category.
Oh, that'd be so good.
That would be fantastic. Would be fantastic. Okay. Paul Giamatti didn't care about his so-called Oscar snub. I did!
Did you moon the TV?
I didn't know, because he wasn't nominated. If he would have lost, I would have mooned the TV, but he wasn't even nominated, so I just had my pants off for 3 months before the Academy Awards. Just in protest, I wore no pants from the time the nominations were announced to the night of the ceremony, when Jamie Foxx didn't deserve to win, but won. So speaking of the Oscars, while much of the movie-going watching world was taken aback when both Thomas Hayden Church and Virginia Madsen received Oscar nominations for their work on Sideways, while Giamatti got nothing, the actor wasn't fazed at all. It's an odd dilemma to be in. I didn't expect to get nominated, so it was like everybody else was way more disappointed than I was, and that was really weird, talking to these people and not knowing what to say to them to take their disappointment away that I didn't get nominated. They did do a hilarious sketch when he hosted SNL where why am I blanking on the dude's name? Finesse Mitchell. Finesse Mitchell was a limo driver picking him up from the Academy Awards. And he gets in the back, and the limo driver has no idea who Paul Giamatti is. He's like, "Are you into movies?" And so he has to like tell him movies that he's been in. And then the conversation that he has is Finesse Mitchell talking about how great Jamie Foxx is. it's very funny. Now this is the I gotta say, Dan, I think this is the craziest one on the list. Paul Giamatti was approached about playing Michael Scott on The Office. Is that crazy? I mean, I could see him do it because he's great, and again, it's hard to imagine anybody but Carell. In 2006, the New York Times reported that when adapting Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's The Office for American television, Paul Giamatti as Michael Scott was on the top of at least one executive's dream list. But Giamatti declined the part. He's portrayed two different presidents. John Adams in a miniseries that earned him a Golden Globe, and then Giamatti took on the role of another president when he voiced Teddy Roosevelt for Ken Burns' The Roosevelts, An Intimate History. All right. When he looks at a role, he just doesn't want to be bored before accepting it. He's just going to say, it's like, am I going to have fun doing this? All right. Giamatti thinks he's been typecast and he's okay with it because he chose his roles on what is most interesting to him. Giamatti often ends up playing oddballs. I think I'm typecast, but that's fine with me. I remember an actor called Bud Cort. I met him once and he said, go ahead and happily be typecast. I resisted it and didn't get cast again. I would happily go back and be typecast. So there you go. Giamatti is very critical of all of his performances. Like so many other artists, Giamatti has a habit of picking apart his performances. I definitely have a tendency to see the blemishes in things, and I see a lot of things about my acting that I don't like. I think I've gotten a little easier on myself, or at least a little more usefully critical of myself. I think, therefore, I just couldn't take looking at myself at all before. I don't know. I'm happy people see something that I don't see. I'm very critical of myself. So there you go. And then finally, he believes that Chuck Rhodes, the character that he plays in Billions, is essentially a good guy. What? Yeah, you guys ever seen Billions?
I haven't, no.
It's just like 5-10 minute stretches.
It's really good, man. You know, him and Damian Lewis, man, in the same show? Come on! I admire what these guys and what my characters do. They're ambitious, driven guys with human needs and desires, and they do believe the law is a kind of instrument for doing good. He acknowledges that Rhode is definitely a flawed person, but I think my character is doing a good thing. There you go. I brought these facts about Paul Giamatti out just to help future Jeopardy contestants.
Do you think Paul asks the questions, like when they do like the videos of the celebrities, or is it just Trebek reading?
Oh, you mean we just have Paul? Yeah. Are you going to say that there's a whole category of Paul? I'll take Paul Giamatti for 400.
Right.
That kind of, and
it would be a first rounder, right? It wouldn't be. It might be second round. That's a little more obscure.
Yeah, it's a little more obscure. I wouldn't be surprised. That would be kind of cool. Paul Giamatti as a category on Jeopardy.
And then Trebek like gives them, you know, the dirty look when they gets it wrong.
Yeah.
Sideways.
Sorry. He's Canadian, man. Trebek is Canadian.
Yep.
He's without he's sans mustache, isn't he? Isn't he sans mustache now?
Yeah, I believe, yes, currently he is.
All right. You know what they really need to do is do a Celebrity Jeopardy. And really get Sean Connery, get the real Sean Connery on. Have Alex Trebek host it.
He's going to come out of seclusion for that.
Just come out of seclusion. Get Burt Reynolds out there, and he has to. And his name has to be Turd Ferguson. It can't say Burt Reynolds. It has to say Turd Ferguson.
And he has to be chewing gum.
Chewing gum
and lots of gum.
And an oversight. It's It's an oversized cowboy hat. It's so funny because they talk about it. Adam McKay was talking about those sketches, and that for some reason Norm, the Burt Reynolds that Norm MacDonald played, was the 70s Burt Reynolds. Even though those episodes took place in the late 90s or early 2000s, it was 70s Burt Reynolds, and there was no explanation for it whatsoever. Like, why is Burt Reynolds younger and looking exactly like he looked in Smokey and the Bandit? All right, celebrities. Have you met them? Well, we're going to talk about that. 312-981-7200. The news is coming up next.